The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for Wednesday, July 28th is just moments away. But before we do this, we need to thank our sponsors. Sponsors like SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, the Chicago Teachers Union, they are now sponsors, and Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for all things there is to know the city of Chicago. Check out ChicagoReader.com. Subscribe to the Chicago Reader if you'd like, and you can become a bin head. You can help support this program. ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky, J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y. Let's start the show. It is Wednesday, July 28th, and live from my apartment and his attic, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, we welcome Ed Mullen, and it's the return of legendary Chicago journalist Monroe Anderson. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Yeah, hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Thomas Barrack Thursday, and here's why. As Dennis said, I spent the better part of the last few days in New York City. I was there. Well, it doesn't matter why I was there.
New York City?
Skyscrapers and everything.
You remember those commercials?
No.
Oh, sorry.
But I do remember the Stevie Wonder song, Living in the City, where the guy comes from the country to the city. He goes, New York City, skyscrapers, everything, which is the line I use every time I go to New York City, D. I go, skyscrapers and everything. In fact, I use that when I'm downtown Chicago. Look, D, skyscrapers and everything. Where was I? Focus, Ben, focus. Oh, yes. Doesn't matter why I was there. I was there, and I happened to be walking across the Brooklyn Bridge early Monday afternoon, gorgeous day. Well, it was actually steamy hot and I was sweating like a horse, but the weather doesn't matter. Focus, Ben, focus. If you've ever veered left off the Brooklyn Bridge, you head into a community known as Brooklyn Heights, which, as every baby boomer can tell you, is the hometown of Kathy and Patty Duke from the Patty Duke Show. Dennis will now sing the opening song from the Patty Duke Show. And this is now Dennis singing. This is not me singing. This is Dennis singing. Kathy's only seen the sights a girl can see from Brooklyn Heights. What a crazy pair.
I was ready. I was going to sing that. The Patty Duke Show. Her name is Patty, last name Duke.
What a great voice you have, Dennis. You should be a singer. Anyway, Dennis's favorite line in that song is where a hot dog makes her lose control.
Oh, that's filthy.
That's actually a line in the song. They snuck it by the censors. Anyway, stop being distracted by the Patty Duke Show, Ben. Stay focused. Stay on point. Anyway, back to the walk across the Brooklyn Bridge into Brooklyn Heights. As you walk further from the bridge, you pass the federal courthouse in Brooklyn. It was at that point when I was walking past that federal courthouse in Brooklyn that, amazing, I got a text message from this show's good friend, Jim Coogan, ace lawyer who comes on to talk about criminal defense and Trump's malfeasance, that kind of thing. Well, I was all set to respond to Jim when I noticed a crowd of media hanging around the federal courthouse. I figured, oh yes, perfect timing. Some celebrity is getting arraigned, and the media is waiting for him or her to walk out of the courthouse surrounded by lawyers, where they walk briskly to a limo that's waiting to avoid comment. Immediately, I was distracted from Jim's text by curiosity. Who is the scoundrel? A mafioso, perhaps? An inebriated New York celebrity? A Trumpster? Yes, it was a Trumpster. Thomas Barrack, to be exact. And how appropriate that Jim Coogan would be texting me at this very moment, because Jim, as I said, is frequently talking about scoundrels and miscreants in Trump's universe. It was like a scene from the Twilight Zone that he would text me at that moment. Ooh. Immediately, I went into full reporter mode. meeting. I sat there among all the gaggle of New York-based reporters and cameramen and other media types and did the deep dive on Thomas Barrett, a man I had only been vaguely aware of until then. And by doing the deep dive, I mean I took out my cell phone and looked up his Wikipedia page. So it was more like the shallow dive. There's a few fun-filled facts I ascertained about Thomas Barrett because I was sitting there outside the courthouse waiting for him to emerge with his lawyers. He's a Republican. What else? He worked in the Reagan administration. Big surprise. He was deputy undersecretary to James Watt, the Interior Secretary, whose claim to fame, by the way, is that he thought the Beach Boys were a bunch of subversives. Stick to the point, Ben. He was rich, Barrett is, even then. In fact, the Secret Service would board its horses at his ranch when President Reagan was at a nearby ranch, proving it pays to have ranches. He's an associate of Harvey Weinstein. Did not know this. Of course, I didn't know much about the guy at all. In 2010, Barrick partnered with Qatar Investment to purchase Weinstein's film production company, Miramax, for $660 million. Soon thereafter, he sold Miramax for a fourfold profit. Smart. That's why he's so rich. In October 2017, his Colony Capital agreed to invest in the Weinstein Company to keep it afloat in light of Weinstein's sexual misconduct allegations, but the deal fell apart. He's also big-time pals with Donald Trump. In 2010, Barrett bought $70 million worth of Jared Kushner's debt on a building in Fifth Avenue in New York. Kushner later avoided bankruptcy when Barrett arranged to reduce the obligations after a request by Trump. I want you to remember that, ladies and gentlemen, the next time you hear Jared Kushner lecture black people about their need to work harder. Not all of us have billionaire friends, Jared Kushner. Here's the key. Also, in terms of his Trump connections, he served as chairman of the committee overseeing Trump's inauguration, for which he raised over $100 million. And he got to give a speech at the 2016 Republican convention where they nominated Donald Trump. My favorite Trump connection is that he denies a quote attributed to him in the 2018 Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury, which he said Trump was not only crazy, but, quote, stupid. Of course he denies it. Trump's been known to behead people for less. But how many among us actually believe he said it? I do. I believe he said it, then he denied it later, which is a favorite tactic of Trumpsters. I never said the thing you said I said. Anyway, now he's facing charges of illegal foreign lobbying on behalf of United Arab Emirates. Apparently, he was their go-between, telling the White House the things that folks in the Emirates wanted Trump to hear. And then here's the tricky part, telling the Emirates, people in the Emirates thing that they probably weren't supposed to hear, like White House intel. Well, that's the accusation. And as Monroe Anderson, my next guest, could tell you, in America, you're innocent until proven guilty. And so Thomas Barrett waits his judgment, having been released on a $250 million bond. That's $250 million, ladies and gentlemen. I told you he was rich. He's going back to his home in Aspen, Colorado, to wait things out. And so there I was by pure happenstance when he made his great exit, but I was not the protester waving the sign calling him a traitor, though I may have said lock him up just to make him feel at home with some rhetoric from the 2016 Trump convention. And I didn't really say it that loud. It was sort of like a side comment I made to one of these cameramen. I'm not sure where the cameraman was working for, but he gave me the courtesy of laughing at it as though he thought it was really funny. And so, folks, I want you to realize something, that no matter where I go or what I do, even if it's officially a day off, I'm still hard at work for you. We got a great show today, everybody. Monroe Anderson, who knew he's not working. He's following Donald Trump. He's ready to talk about all the Trump news of the day, including yesterday's congressional hearing, which I was also following, by the way. And Ed Mullen will be our guest in the second part of the show. Fascinating guest. He's an election lawyer. You probably know about him. He represents a lot of progressive left-of-center candidates. And he's obsessively following the map-making for the Supreme Court in Illinois. And Monroe, you have to stick around to hear this, because the Democrats in Illinois, in my humble opinion, are about to blow it again. And they're Democrats in Illinois don't seem to understand that Republicans don't play fairly. when it comes to politics. And they don't listen to Monroe Anderson and the Ben Jarofsky show explain what a bunch of low down dirty cheats Republicans are. And they act as though it's all legit. And so we're going to be stuck with Supreme Court maps that may allow the Republicans to maintain control or take control of the Supreme Court in the state of Illinois. Monroe, if there weren't so many other problems in the world, I'd be really upset about that one at the top of the list. Instead, it's like somewhere in the lower end of the list. Anyway, that's our show today. Monroe Anderson is on deck. Monroe, welcome back, young man.
It's good to be back.
And you look very rested and healthy and wise and ready to take the deep dive. And where do I begin? So much to begin with. I'll let you choose. Which topic do you want to start with today?
Oh, dear. I guess we should start with the January 6th trial.
I think that's an excellent.
It's so many things that's going on. But that hearing yesterday was incredible.
Talk about what struck you the most about the hearing yesterday.
How emotional the cops were and how emotional the Illinois representative, Kinzinger. Yeah, he had watery eyes. I don't know if you saw it or not, but he was when he was talking, doing his part, when he was fighting back tears, he was so upset. I mean, it is so incredible what these guys had to go through from the Blue Lives Matter people. If the Blue Lives Matter people will treat them the way they treated them, what they do to us, meaning black folks.
Well, some of the two of the cops that testified, one of the cops that testified was a black man.
Then the other was from the DR.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, Monroe, that testimony, it didn't surprise me, the blatant bigotry coming out of the mouths and the hate coming out of the mouths of the Trump protesters. Right. I wasn't surprised by it, but it's still shocking to hear it.
Well, a white supremacist is going to be a white supremacist.
Yeah.
And so that's the sort of things they're going to say. And they're just haters. It's amazing. And they're stupid. Because they actually thought that they would be able to take over the Capitol building. And Trump tried to help them as much as he could. He didn't call in the National Guard. He didn't go on camera in time and say, enough already. This is America. We don't need a violent takeover. Mm-hmm. It was like, go team, go.
And then the response of MAGA to the testimony yesterday has struck me. We are as divided as we've ever been.
Right.
And so when you talk about how you were moved by the testimony of the four police officers, MAGA mocks them.
Right. And
says the tears aren't real, says they're exaggerating. Says that it's all sort of like this a game created by Democrats to make Trump look bad. So it's like looking at the same exact thing with a totally different reaction.
And as you know, we really, really, really got to work hard to make Trump look bad. It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. You know, I've taken to with my right wingers on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I would make post ridiculous statements about Trump, in one or the other of the lies. I tell them. Now, that's what they're saying on Pluto. On planet Earth, this is what's going on. And, you know, Pluto isn't even a planet anymore. It's an asteroid. So he got a really tiny little something-something.
So, help me out here now. You're my expert on MAGA. What's going on in MAGA's mind? I mean, I'm trying to view...
August 13th. Mm-hmm. That's what you got to look out for. Mike, the pillow guy, says that on August 13th, Biden and Harris are going to say, well, tricked you. We're not really president and vice president. Trump is president, and we're not sure who's going to be the vice president. Yeah. Pence is on the shit list right now, so...
Yeah, I don't know who they're going to insert.
Right. But it doesn't matter. As long as Trump alone can do it. He doesn't need a vice president. Nah.
But I was reading some of the articles about the people who have been arrested in connection with January 6th. And there was a story about a police officer from New York City who is facing charges having to do with using a flag holder as a weapon.
Yeah.
And he was like trying to gouge people's eyes out. This guy is a cop.
Right.
A Marine.
Yeah. And his job was to protect City Hall.
Yes.
In New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he had the same job in New York City, effectively, that these police officers had at Capitol. He was protecting right. elected officials.
Right, right.
And now he was attacking them. Right. And the people who know him talk about how, like, his life changed in the last year. He got more and more political. When I read these articles about the insurrectionists, the January 6th protesters, it's like reading an article that after the fact about somebody who got involved with a terrorist organization.
He's radicalized. That's what they call it. When these people who weren't interested become crazy about it. He got radicalized online. And one of the issues that's in the past week that keeps rearing its ugly head is how Facebook is responsible for all sorts of things evil. I mean, they're responsible for COVID. Because they allowed all these crazy theories to be posted on their walls, and for a lot of people, Facebook is their source of news. What they see there is what they believe. Well, and the same thing with Trump. You know, Trump and the big lie.
Yeah. I mean, if you. You don't have to listen. I'm not letting Facebook off the hook. Don't get me started on Facebook. I go on and on about Facebook, but it's beyond Facebook right now. You know, it's like who was it? Laura Ingraham.
Yeah, Ingraham. Yeah.
I was watching a bit where she was denigrating the testimony. And there's no attempt whatsoever on the part of MAGA to anyway take serious the consequences of their behavior. No attempt whatsoever. No. It's a political fight from the get-go. So you can't have that. They wouldn't participate in the commission unless they were going. Their sole purpose would be to.
Turn it into a circus.
Yeah. That was the ground rules for their participation.
Right.
So now they're going to pretend they didn't watch it, or if they did watch it, they're rolling their eyes.
They don't believe it. Yeah, right.
They don't believe it.
Right.
So it's a scary moment, Monroe, because you can't have a legitimate political debate with an opposition. And when I say opposition, I mean in the traditional sense of like that's the opposing party, but we kind of agree on certain elements. Do you follow myself? Like Kinzinger represents and Cheney represents.
Hello, Manchin and Sinema. they're sitting around saying, well, we're going to have a legitimate debate about these things, and therefore we need the filibuster. And the Republicans are saying, if the tables were turned, the filibuster would be dead and buried by now.
Yeah, no, I find that astounding. Every step of the way, I've given up hoping for this. I actually have given up hoping for this, but the expectation is that there will be some soul searching on the Republican Party. And I'm so used to this as a Democrat. Every time the Democrats lose an election, there's quote unquote soul searching, which means usually beating up the left. Blaming the left, all right? You know, and I've heard about it. I've heard it from many of my friends, including the man I'm talking to right now, where the left went too far and this. But it's
wait a minute. No.
I was waiting to see if I could get a rise out of you.
You're not going to trump me on your show.
Okay, so you didn't say the left went too far. Exactly. You did make fun of me for loving Bernie so much. But you know what I'm talking about, Monroe. There's
too much, not so much. Too much.
Too much. But there's so much. Okay, there's soul searching. Nothing like that on Republicans' part. It's like they never. It's like they never did anything wrong. They're not guilty of anything.
And if they did do anything wrong, they didn't mean it.
Yeah, they didn't mean it.
Right.
Did you see that? You saw the testimony of the police officer about the people yelling all the racial epithets at him.
Oh yeah.
And then the other
one.
Yeah. So how do the Republicans talk their way out of that?
You know, when Mick Jagger was criticized by the Puerto Rican community for that line, hey, man, we're going to meet some Puerto Rican girls and have fun, and they were upset about that, Jagger's response was, if they can't take a joke, fuck them. So that's the Republicans. That's the Republicans' response to all their racist stuff. Because if you can't take a joke, we don't really hate niggers, but if you can't take a joke, fuck you.
Yeah. Well, that. So, what do you think is going to come of this? The committee hearing.
Oh, I think it's going to turn the tables. I think that except for the MAGAs, the Stone Cold MAGAs, the cult. Everybody else, by the time this is done, will be voting Democrat. The independents, the Asians, the Hispanics, the gays, the transes, the people, and blacks. Everybody's going to be going against the Republicans because they're so married to Trump, so enthralled by him, so fearful of him, that they're going along. And now, basically what he's doing now is a litmus test. If you don't go with the big lie completely, then I have nothing to do with you. Yeah, the Republicans should be running on inflation and overspending. And the border, they should be running on real issues. But instead, what they have to do is repeat Trump's lie about his having won the election, and that it was stolen from him.
actually, I'm not sure any of the issues you named are real issues, but this gets into a larger frustration. Not,
but at least it's something that they can have besides something that's obviously crazy.
Yeah. Well, what my point is that what makes us of unique, not in a great way unique, but a point in time, is that you can't even get an agreement between Republicans and Democrats on the problems and challenges that we face. So one obvious one being climate change.
Right.
Republicans deny that it even exists, even though the evidence of it is all around us.
Well, they're just not coming around to saying, well, maybe you ought to get a vaccination.
Okay, now we're talking about vaccinations. Let's talk about that. So that's another example. Yeah, climate change. So, for instance, there's like a debate would be the Republican approach to dealing with climate change, which I presume will be market-based. Right. Some kind of market. Since they deny that it exists, there is no Republican, there's no debate, and there are no Republican options on the table to discuss. So then let's move to the pandemic, which the whole country is, Monroe, I could go on and on about this, is sending out so many mixed messages on the pandemic right here in Chicago with Lollapalooza, but put that aside for the moment. The Republicans have not officially recognized that the pandemic is real.
No. It's still the flu.
It's still the flu. You know, and so I saw this, an article, get your response to this, by the governor of Alabama, where the pandemic is very real, and the number of COVID cases is going up, largely because people aren't getting vaccinated.
Right.
And her suggestion was to get people to get vaccinated by telling them that it was the Trump vaccination.
Yes.
If you let them know that this was a great achievement by this great president, they will be vaccinated. That was her strategy. And I'm like, that may work.
No, too little, too late. No, seriously, they have been lied to about this for an entire year, more than a year, going on year and a half almost. They've been constantly lied to. I saw a meeting with one of the governors and his medical people, mm-hmm, with some Trump folks, and this is Republicans, and they say in the meeting, these are medical people, that the vaccination will not make you infertile, because that's one of the lies they have out there, that if you get the COVID vaccination, if you're a woman, you won't be able to have children. And so the medical person says the vaccination will not make you sterile. And the crowd is going, liar, liar, liar. I mean, you could give them any sort of fact you want. And they've been so lied to, so fooled, so conned, that they're only going to believe the con now. And I don't know if Trump can reverse this now. I don't know if he goes on TV and says, well, first of all, let me confess. I got the vaccination in January, and so did my family, all my family members. It works, it's good for you, just do it. And they would say, the Democrats got a hold of Trump and shot him up with some sort of drug that makes him lie about his lies.
No, the way Trump would do it, and he was inching that way. I remember during the debates, if you can call them debates, the Pence, Kamala Harris, and Trump, Biden, Trump and Pence dealt with the accusation or the question that they hadn't done enough in regards to helping the country defend itself against COVID by saying, we're the ones who engineered the creation, the production of the vaccine, and that'll save us. Right. I think, I forget what they call it. They have some name, some, they always come up with Operation, I think it's Warp Speed.
It was Warp Speed.
And so this is our initiative.
Right.
And okay. So the classic Trump response would be, this is the greatest vaccine that has ever existed. I am the greatest man who ever existed because I'm the one who created the vaccine. So you'd be thinking like Trump was mixing like chemicals in a lab somewhere or whatever, you know? And then that's like, and that is.
Yeah. When I fight with Trump nuts on Facebook, what I point out to them is that we're not the only one with a vaccine. That the UK has a vaccine, Russia has a vaccine, China has a vaccine. There are other vaccines. And not only that, but with the Pfizer vaccine, Germany paid for a lot of it, not America.
Yeah. So what you're doing right there is analyzing Trump's assertion. You're doing like a Washington Post fact check of a Trump assertion.
Yes.
But the point that I'm making is that putting aside whether what Trump is saying is accurate, that's classic Trump talk that MAGA loves.
Yes.
And my thought is if like Trump wanted to take credit for the vaccine, I'm wondering, I don't know if this is true. This is what the governor of Alabama was suggesting.
Yeah, so far, he hasn't.
Yeah, he hasn't. He hasn't because he sees that MAGA has gone to an extreme in its opposition to the vaccine and to just any kind of government initiative to protect us against COVID. But if Trump were to try to take credit for it, I'm just wondering whether the governor of Alabama is correct and that you would see MAGA people suddenly getting vaccinated because Donald Trump had said it was the right thing. Donald Trump had taken credit for it. Do you get what I'm saying? Donald Trump had taken something that is like a Democratic thing.
Well, he's made reference to the fact that he's responsible for the vaccine and he's not getting credit. But again, right now, well, his focus since November 8th or something like that has been on, well, actually even before that, his focus when the disease first hit was he was just trying to figure out how to use it to his advantage and not have it harm him. His focus was on getting reelected. That's the only thing that mattered to him. I mean, literally nothing else. And that has come out in the I Alone Can Fix It book, where they talk about Miley had a meeting with the other military heads where they game played what to do if Trump wanted to use the military to have a coup, how they were going to stop him from doing it. So his sole focus since he left office has been on how he can get back in office. And so, nothing else matters to him. If he actually thought that the virus taking credit Warp Speed and saying that was it and that would help him get elected, he'd adopt it. But that's he doesn't think that's going to work for him.
By the way, I sent you as a homework assignment. I'm not sure if you had an opportunity to do your homework. That essay that Michael Wolff wrote for the New York Times, he sat down with Trump, and it's so bizarre. Michael Wolff wrote a book that was critical of Trump. Trump denounced the book. I just quoted how Thomas Barrack, Trump's ally, who's now in trouble with the feds, says the quotes in the book are not accurate, you know. So, like, anybody believes him over Wolf. And yet Trump sat down with Wolf for an interview as Wolf geared up for the second book, where he's going to make all this money bashing Trump again. Trump doesn't care.
This is his third Trump book.
It's his third Trump book. But he's convinced, based on sitting down and having the conversation with Trump, that Trump's running for re-election.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt in his mind, get ready for it. Trump has utterly just no regard whatsoever for all the cases.
I read the column, and his arguments as to why were pretty sound, I thought. You know, Trump, what anybody else who's not a con man would see as liabilities, Trump thinks he's going to be used to his advantage.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that he's got all these legal challenges in New York is going to work to his advantage, because people are going to see that they're out to get him. His people are going to see that they're out to get him. The problem with this whole Trumpism that's going on now is that they are still a minority, and they're going to need a majority to put him back in office. So this is why they have a dual track going on, where they were trying to rile up their people. That's what this whole Stop the Steal business is about, rile up his people. But the other part of it, which they're doing in invisible sight, is the voter suppression and the voter counting. Those votes that they can't suppress, they will decide that, you got 20,000 votes, we got 19 and a half, we won. but they are obviously out to steal the vote.
All right,
the Democrats are still figuring out what good policies they can have that's going to convince the people to vote for them.
All right. That's a perfect segue to get into bring on our next guest to talk about Democrats versus Republicans, how they view the world. I'm going to ask Monroe to stick around for that. Ed Mullen will be joining us, election lawyer. We'll take a break before we do that. But I'm going to tease Monroe with the question I'm going to ask him when we come back. And that'll be, is Chicago sending out a mixed message in the fight against the pandemic by hosting Lollapalooza? So that is, Monroe's going to have a little time to figure out an answer to that one. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to bring Ed Mullen on to join us. Stick around, everybody.
Hey, welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from his attic.
Great job by Dennis. Great production work there. We have our issues with Google Meet, which I will not tell anybody about. I made a pledge. This is not the week I'm going to talk about Google Meet, but it requires some brilliant, brilliant maneuvering by Dennis. And he just did a great job doing it. Ed Mullen, ace election lawyer, about to join us. He's I could see him right there, Monroe. Before I bring Ed on, I'm going to ask you to answer that question that I laid out, and maybe Ed Mullen, maybe force him to take a stand on this one. He's like looking a little nervous. He's like, I don't know if I want to answer a tough question. Is Mayor Lori Lightfoot sending out a very dangerous mixed message where she's telling the public, essentially, in about a week, we're really going to have to worry about this pandemic? But hey, man, not this week, because Lollapalooza's in town, and let's rock and roll and smoke a lot of reefer. Monroe Anderson, is Lori Lightfoot sending out a dangerous mixed message? Yes or no? Go.
It's not a yes or no answer, because the theory is that, A, they're outdoors, so the virus doesn't spread as easily outdoors, because it can go into the ether or someplace. Secondly, you have to be vaccinated, or proof of vaccination, or proof that in the past you got a test, the negative test in the past 3 days. Mm-hmm. So the likelihood is that it won't be a huge number of illness. It won't be a big one of those spreader activities that Trump was famous for. But on the other hand, some will get sick. That's for sure. And so my thinking on this is that I won't be out there. But I'm gonna send you a report back and tell me how good it was.
That's funny, Monroe Anderson. You know, if it was like maybe the Isley Brothers or something like that, some group from the 70s, I'd be out there.
But, oh, that's New York, which where you were. You should have stayed.
I should.
You know, they had a big concert there.
Yeah. All right, Ed Mullen, bringing you on. Let's watch Ed Mullen dance around this one, Monroe. Ed Mullen, ace election lawyer. We're here to talk about the Democrats and the maps they're drawing for state Supreme Court, which is a fascinating story that you told me about. Monroe, you got to hear this one. Stick around to hear this one. Ed Mullen's going to tell us a story that I believe shows that Democrats really don't know how to play the game when it comes to dealing with Republicans. Both of you are free to disagree with me vehemently on that. But Ed, before we get to that, is Lori Lightfoot, as I am asserting, sending out a dangerous mixed message? Or do you agree with Monroe that there's enough safety built into this so that it's okay to have Lollapalooza right now?
Well, what I found very interesting about Monroe's answer is he said on one hand, and then he said on the other hand, and your question is whether she's sending mixed signals, that I think if you have to answer the question on one hand and another hand, then she's inherently sending mixed messages. But to me, the issue is Dr. Arwady is saying that if we have 200 cases a day, that we are in a riskier category. But if you look at the testing, it's gone down so much recently that so fewer people are going to get tested. Do we really know whether we're hitting that 200 number or not already? And that's what concerns me, is that we may already be in the risk area and not know it because so many fewer people are getting tested. So I'm a little concerned about Lollapalooza, and I don't think you'll be seeing me down there.
Okay, Ben, so you've got to represent both of us.
Okay, no, I'm not going anywhere near Lollapalooza. I think the whole thing is insane. I believe that they just didn't want to. It reminds me in some ways, and Ed and Monroe, you'll get a, I don't know if you agree with me in this one, but it reminds me in some ways of what was going on right before the March primary of 2020. We were heading into this pandemic. And this was the very early stages when there was no vaccine, and it was a very scary moment in our country. But we wanted to have that primary. We didn't want to delay the primary. So it was almost like they were saying, we're going to get really serious about social distancing and protecting ourselves against the vaccine, but go out and vote. And later on, Ed and Monroe, you both know this, some states canceled primaries because it got very serious and they didn't know if they could protect people. And so I just had the feeling it's a similar thing where we have this big money-making venture that people have bought tickets for. It's going to be an enormous headache to stop it. So let's just pretend as though this pandemic's not coming. And then as soon as Lollapalooza leaves town, we're getting more serious about it. Ed, do you think I am way too cynical for my own good?
No, I think you're right. I think a lot of times in this pandemic, we've been a step behind. I think, going back to shutting down the St. Patrick's Day parade, everyone was like, that's too big a thing. We can't shut that down. And then as it got closer, people realized the danger and said, even though it's a big thing and so many people have planned it and there's so much money around it, we got to shut it down. And I think that's happened over and over during the pandemic, that we've been kind of surprised by
by how strong it comes on it sometimes.
All right, let's leave this topic behind, and Ed is going to give us sort of a primer or a primer, however you pronounce it, on the maps that govern Illinois state Supreme Court justices, and what the Democrats have done with the maps and the possible impact it could have. I want everybody to take notebooks out and pens and take notes. This will all be on the test. It's very important because this determines so much of policy and politics in the state of Illinois, even if you don't realize it. So, Ed, why don't you start at the top and talk about how judges are how we decide who gets to sit on the Supreme Court in the state of Illinois.
Sure. So currently we have 7 members on our Illinois Supreme Court, and they are all elected members, and they serve for a 10-year term. And currently we have 4 Democratic members on the Supreme Court, and we have 3 Republican members on the Supreme Court. The districts are drawn so that Cook County actually consists of 3 separate Illinois Supreme Court justices. So 3 of the justices come out of Cook County and are reliably Democratic. The other 4 districts are spread throughout the state. And so we need to make sure that we have 1 district in the rest of the state that is a reliable Democratic district to make sure that we continue to hold a 4-3 majority on the Supreme Court. The Cook County seats are all filled, but this election there are going to be 2 seats that are vacant. And one of those vacancies is because Thomas Kilbride in 2020, who was a Democratic justice who was elected, did not get retained for another 10-year term. So he needed 60% of the vote in order to get retained. Opponents spent $6.2 million against Kilbride and his retention. They tied him to Michael Madigan and Chicago corruption and Springfield corruption, and they wound up winning that seat. And so the legislature this spring and this early summer rewrote the lines for the Supreme Court like they did with the General Assembly maps. And those lines have not been drawn since 1964. So it's been decades since there has been a change in the drawing of those lines. And it came on pretty quickly. There was not a lot of conversation and a lot of public debate about what the Supreme Court lines were going to look like. And so when you have Cook County making up 3, the ideal situation is to create a 4th district that would be reliably Democratic. And while I'm not a map expert, I'm an election law expert, I saw several maps, one that would have included Winnebago County and Rockford in the 2nd district that would have made it more Democratic than it is, and another one that put Kane and DuPage and Will into a district that would have been a reliably Democratic district. But what we have right now is lines have been passed by the legislature, so there's no debate on what these lines are going to be. They are what they are, and the next election is going to be using these lines. And so we have a 2nd district with a vacancy, and that district, Governor Pritzker won that district 48% to 46%. And then we have a 3rd district, which also has a vacancy, and Governor Pritzker won that district 47.4% to 46.4%. So he had a 1-point lead in what's now the 3rd district and a 2-point lead in what's now the 2nd district. But what you layer on to that is the fact that McCann, who was a Libertarian candidate, got 3.4% in the 2nd district and 4% in the 3rd district. And what that means is if you add the Libertarian and Republican candidate together, this becomes a tough race both in the 2nd district and the 3rd district for Democrats. The good news is if you look at the presidential race when we had Trump on the ballot, he will not be on the ballot when these seats are voted on. Biden did very well. He won 56 to 42 in the 2nd district, and he won 53 to 45 in the third district. So looking at just the Biden-Trump numbers, it looks reliably Democratic. But these are definitely swing districts. And, you know, we have two very tight races to see whether or not we can keep control of the Illinois Supreme Court, either as a 4-3 majority or as a 5-2 majority.
All right. So let me lay this out in the most basic of terms so everybody can understand it. Seven justices, you need four to have a decisive to have the winning vote. Okay, if it's just a party line vote, and I know all these Supreme Court judges are going, Ben, that's not how it works. You don't understand.
It's balls and strikes.
Yes, it's yeah, it's balls and strikes. Like John Roberts, Ben, it's not partisan. We're just one court.
Right, but we know Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Clarence Thomas somehow don't see balls and strikes exactly the same. Yeah.
That's correct. Absolutely. So I know there may be a few suckers out there, maybe work for the BGA or something like that, who actually believe that stuff or pretend they do. But anyway, in the real world, where we all must survive, it's 4-3 Republicans, Democrats. So the Democrats have a choice. They can either create four districts that are so Democrat that I, Ben Jarofsky, could run. And I never even went to law school. And I wouldn't campaign. I would just go ride my bike all day. And I still would win. You could create four Democratic seats that are so Democrat that I could win. All right? Or these Democrats, my beloved Democrats. Well, what we could do is create three that are so ironclad that Ben could win. And then we'll create, like, these two that maybe a Democrat has a good chance of winning, but not Ben. Okay. It's not that ironclad. And so it's like I told Ed Mullen, man, the Democrats have never heard that old saying, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. So they created a situation, Monroe Anderson, this is my beloved Democratic Party. Yeah, where they set it up where they could lose.
Right. You know what your beloved Democrats should have done?
What's that?
They should have asked themselves, what would Texas do?
Now, that is so true, Monroe. What would Texas do? In other words, what would Texas Republicans do? Now, Ed, I know the role you're supposed to play. You're a good government lawyer. You're an election lawyer. And I know you do not officially agree with me and Monroe when we say Democrats in Illinois should be like Republicans in Texas, okay? Because that's too partisan, and that's not embracing each other kumbaya style. But come on, there's got to be a part of you, Ed Mullen, that goes, yeah, Monroe's right. Democrats in Illinois should play the game like Republicans in Texas. Your thoughts, Ed Mullen?
Well, I think Texans might think that they can suppress the vote of the Democrats and win the close races, and that's why they're changing the law. So I think they're playing chess on a couple different boards in addition to just the maps. And you know, we've got a situation where Illinois has actually done a lot in the last couple of years to expand access to the ballot. We have automatic voter registration, all the things that they're stopping in Georgia and Texas and other states, we're expanding. So I think we are doing a lot to expand both the electorate and the ability of voters who are not frequent voters, or voters with disabilities, voters who work night shift, other people to get out and vote. So I think we are doing a good job in that respect, in opposition to what Texas is doing to make sure our voters can vote and their votes can be counted. But I do think that, it would be much better to have a secure fourth seat and know that we have this majority on the court, because it's a 10-year mistake, right? It's not a 2-year or a 4-year mistake where we can go back and try to do it again in 2 years if we lose. I mean, the second and third district are electing Supreme Court justices for the next 10 years. And there's a lot of issues that are going to come before the Supreme Court. We've got you know, potential issues relating to abortion rights if the Supreme Court overturns Roe. We've got criminal justice issues that are going to come up under the new criminal justice reform bills that have just been passed. We're going to have questions about redistricting. There's a lot of issues that are going to come before the Illinois Supreme Court in the next 10 years that are very controversial and important issues. And it's extraordinarily important if you are a Democrat and you believe in democratic values to make sure that those values are represented on the Supreme Court. And the reality is that Republicans think a lot more about the courts than Democrats do. And I think one of the reasons they've been more successful at the appellate and the Supreme Court level in the state of Illinois is because they focus on it a lot more, and Democrats haven't done as good a job educating their average voter on the importance of the courts.
Ed, my question is it too late, or can Democrats do something to rectify the error?
No, so I mean, it's a value choice. I mean, Ben thinks it's an error. I think, you know, it's a risky choice, but I don't know that it's necessarily an error. But no, it's too late to change it. These districts have been drawn. The bill has been passed. The bill has been signed. And these are the districts that are going to exist for the next set of elections and through the next 10 years at least.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. It's going to require for Democrats to get their act together on this, Ed and Monroe. It's going to require a whole new mindset. And you're right, Ed. Republicans seem to be more aware of the importance of the courts than Democrats in general. They seem to be more aware of it. Let's put it this way. Go back to 2016 when Hillary was running against Donald Trump. And Democrats were trying to explain to voters there are Supreme Court seats that could be in play. So even if you don't love Hillary Clinton, you got to admit that she'll point people to the bench that are more in your thinking. That didn't seem, Ed Mullen, to really motivate Democrats that well.
But I think you have to go back even further to Barack Obama appointing Merrick Garland, and Garland just didn't garner any excitement from the Democratic people, and we could have done a lot. Maybe we wouldn't have succeeded, but a lot more than actually happened to try to get him appointed. I mean, I think a lot of people thought, well, Hillary's going to get elected, and so we don't really have to fight this fight, and she's going to appoint either him or someone else. And we just let that go.
Yeah, there's a whole separate debate that we've had on this show that had Obama appointed somebody, I think Monroe and I have had this conversation more than once, had Barack Obama knew that the Republicans were going to resist his appointee. And so what he tried to do was appoint somebody that he thought the Republicans would say, oh my God, he's so fair-minded. He's so in the middle of the road. It's not a heavily. I'm laughing, thinking of the logic. Monroe, Barack Obama plays the game. How he plays the political game, I will never understand. He plays it like it's legit. And the Republicans, they didn't care they didn't care that Merrick Garland was down the middle of the road. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
They treated him like he was a lefty.
Right.
What if he had appointed an African-American woman or a Latino, you know, and advocacy groups and, you know, that would have been much more engaged in trying to get that person appointed than, right. You know, a mushy, straight white male.
Absolutely. And right. Think about this, Ed. First of all, he could if let's say he appointed a black woman. The Republicans wouldn't have given her a vote any more than they gave Merrick Garland a vote. But, and this goes against that whole Rahm Emanuel, Barack Obama, David Axelrod mindset, it would have fired up the base.
Right.
and that she had been rejected.
Jesse Jackson and Reverend Al would be making a visit to McConnell's office.
Yes.
With a bunch of folks.
Exactly. But the Dems are always saying to Jesse Jackson, don't get involved. You're going to scare white people. Ed Mullen, you're old enough to remember 2000 when Bush and Gore were fighting it out in Florida and Jesse Jackson was ready to go. Monroe, I know you remember this. Ready to go to Florida. And the Gore campaign said, don't come. Don't embarrass us. Don't, you know. And meanwhile, Republicans are in the freaking streets. You know what I'm saying? Putting the pressure on. Ed Mullen, they play the game differently than Democrats. They have a better.
Right. I mean, the thing that they talk about Gore is how graciously he conceded. I mean, that's not what I want to remember him for. I want to remember him for how hard he fought.
Right.
Well, you can't remember him for that because he didn't fight very hard.
No.
Meanwhile, Trump still hasn't conceded. He got his butt whooped. All right. Now. And let's go back to these two districts that the Democrats have. So in other words, folks, just when you make a map, the more Democrats you put in a map, the easier it is for the Democrats to win the election. It's 101 of map making. OK, so if you concentrate your Democrats into four districts, you win all four districts. You control the Supreme Court. If you spread them out in the hopes that you win five, you have the opportunity, you leave open the likelihood that you're not going to win. This is basic math that the Democrats haven't quite fathomed, haven't quite figured out. Even I get it. And I almost flunked algebra at Evanston Township High School. I get it. Ed Mullen gets it. The Democrats don't get it. Ed, I want you to play devil's advocate with me. Okay? What, make yourself like a Democrat. An Illinois regular Democrat. What's the chances they can win these two districts? What's going to, you already said that Biden did better than Pritzker in the election, which is, that just shows you something about Trump's popularity in this state. I don't know. That Rauner is more popular than Trump. So you've already talked about that. What else can Dems do to win these two seats?
Well, I think one thing we have to do is get candidates who are going to excite Democrats and voters who would not typically be looking at a Supreme Court race. The second thing is I think we need to get regular voters involved. I think, you know, the unions and the trial lawyers have been at the forefront of these races on the Democratic side, and the Chamber of Commerce has been at the forefront of these races on the Republican side. And I think, you know, getting average voters and activist groups, you know, whether it's Indivisible or Our Revolution or Democracy for America, these more grassroots groups, you know, getting them engaged in a court race in a way that they typically don't do. But as a regular Democrat, I'm looking at the map. I mean, to play devil's advocate with you a little, you know, you look at Lake County and, you know, a decade ago, all of the countywide officials in Lake County were Democrats. Now you've got a Democratic sheriff, a Democratic state's attorney, a Democratic treasurer. You know, Lake County and Kane County and DuPage County and Will County are all trending Democratic. But we got to win it this year. You know, we can't win it in 2 years or 3 years. We got to win it this year. So I think they're going to be close races. But I think if we get good candidates,
who would those candidates be? Give us two or three names just out of curiosity.
So Nancy Rotering, the mayor of Highland Park, denounced her candidacy this morning or yesterday. I think she filed her statement of organization with the State Board of Elections. And, you know, she's someone with name recognition. She's a University of Chicago graduate, chairman of the board of the North Suburban Legal Aid, a lot of strong progressive credentials. There are a few other judges running in that race, but there are no appellate court judges. I mean, normally, if you look at Cook County, the people who run for Supreme Court in Cook County are people who are sitting on the appellate court, and they're people who they've been elected to circuit court, they've been elected to appellate court, and then they're running for Supreme Court. So they've got experience, they've got They've been vetted because they've run. They know how to run a campaign. They know how to raise money. We don't have that bench in the second district, which is Lake and McHenry and Kane. Mike Nolan won a countywide, former state senator Mike Nolan won a countywide election for judge in Kane County 2 years ago, I think. And that was the first countywide Democrat to win in Kane County. There had been some sub-circuit judges. So these are new Democratic districts. If you're looking at the third district, there is an appellate court justice who's running by the name of Mary Kay O'Brien, former state representative. And then there's a circuit court judge by the name of Vincent Cornelius who's running. And I think, I haven't met either of those candidates, but, they have, pretty good credentials. And so I'm confident that we're going to be able to put forward some good candidates, but they're going to be close races, and they're going to need support from all wings of the Democratic Party. It can't be, kind of a Hillary Bernie type thing or insiders versus outsiders. It's got to be the kind of race where we, put those differences aside and understand that we've got to win this. Mm-hmm. And it has long-term implications for the state on a whole range of issues that are important to Democrats.
And I'll point this out. And I know both of you know this, Ken Griffin, the multi-gazillionaire who kicked in so much money to Bruce Rauner's campaign, kicked in so much money to the opposition to the Fair Tax campaign, and kicked in so much money to the effort to essentially defeat Thomas Kilbride. They didn't elect a new justice. It was a no confidence vote in Kilbride. So it was not reelected, if you will. He'll be kicking in money, Ed Mullen, for the Republican.
And I think a lot of this comes out of, we've talked offline about redistricting, but I think a lot of this comes out of the Illinois Supreme Court's rejection of the referendum to do redistricting. And that's such an important thing to the Republican parties and to the big Republican donors that I think, they're going to put a lot of money into this. And if they win, they're going to try to change the redistricting process in Illinois so that, they put the Democrats with one hand behind their back in that process and try to get a stronger delegation in the General Assembly than the population would allow them.
All right, so I'm going to try to put aside the gloom and doom and the shaking my head at disbelief at how my beloved Democrats play the game and how they seem to always be a step behind and clueless. I'm going to ask you this. You told me something. I didn't realize this until you just said it now, Ed, and I'll repeat this, that Joe Biden did much better in these districts among these voters than J.B. Pritzker did. So yeah, that leads me to believe that there's a strong base of anti-Trump sentiment in these districts. So my thought, the first thing that any Democratic strategist should do is put Donald Trump's head on the neck of any Supreme Court justice they're running against so that effectively Donald Trump is running for Supreme Court justice, that you're putting MAGA's number one leader on the Supreme Court. That would just be, based on what you told me, that would be my strategy. Would you subscribe to that strategy, Ed Mullen, or do you think they should ignore Donald Trump? Go.
Well, I'm not sure, and I'm a lawyer, not a strategist, but I'll take a stab at this anyway. You look at Donald Trump's record in endorsements, and one of the things that has repeatedly come up is that when Donald Trump endorses people and his name's on the ballot, his endorsements seem to carry a lot of weight. But when he endorses people when he's not on the ballot, like in the special election in Texas a couple days ago, his endorsement doesn't seem to be doing as much. And I think that it might be the same case in reverse, where when he's not actually on the ballot, it's not as big of a deal. But also you have to remember the electorate is different in off years. I mean, you don't have the president at the top of the ticket to draw out a lot of less regular voters who, you know, lean Democratic. So I think there are a lot of, you know, things that are positive about the way these districts are drawn. They're going to be tight races.
Monroe, your thoughts. Should the Democrats put Donald Trump's head on the neck of every single one of these judges running in these Supreme Court districts? Should they use Donald Trump effectively, try to use him against the Republicans?
Yes, for sure.
Ed, I'm with Monroe 100% on this one, right?
Yeah. You know, one of the things is that Trump's endorsement is a lot more valuable in a primary, Republican primary, than it is in a general.
Yeah.
And so I think they should, they should just put his head on there.
Well, Ed, who, by the way, is a political junkie. If he knew about that special congressional district race that just went down in Texas, that's a sign of political junkiehood. And the only reason I know about it, Ed Mullen, is that for some reason, I've said this many times, I am on every single email solicitation list. So I've gotten literally hundreds of email solicitations from Jake Alizi, is that how he pronounces his name? Who was the victorious candidate in that special election. It was a special election, Monroe, that created, when I am not making this up and I'm being not facetious in any way, the sitting Republican congressman died of COVID-related conditions. Yeah. His wife was appointed to replace him, and she was running for to have it as a permanent seat till the next election. She was running against this former military man who was running to the right of her, and Trump endorsed the congresswoman. So this dude was, he didn't know how to go, Ed Mullen and Monroe, because he wanted to blast Nancy Pelosi and Black Lives Matter and, you know, and all the typical boogeymen that the Republicans have picked. But he wasn't, he didn't have Trump's endorsement, and he won. He somehow won. And so now no one knows what, it's like Ed was saying, they don't know what it means to have Trump's endorsement anymore. And I don't know what to make of that election, other than if I'm getting hundreds and hundreds of emails from this dude, people in Texas must be getting thousands of emails from him. So maybe he's just better organized.
Right. One other thing I'll say that was sort of in the back of my mind that didn't come through in my answer is that judicial elections are a little bit different than other elections. And there are canons of judicial ethics that are interpreted so that candidates running for judge tend not to go in that direction in terms of their mail and their messaging. And typically that type of negative messaging is going to come from someone other than the candidate. So whether it's an independent expenditure committee that's set up by people who are interested in the race or by the party or by someone other than the candidate themselves, because the candidates are generally expected to stay above the fray in these elections. And sometimes that makes them harder to win because you want a candidate that's going to go out there and fight for it, like a congressional race or any other race that people are, you know, scrapping to win. And sometimes the Supreme Court justice races, just because of these judicial canons and because of tradition, aren't willing to do that. And other people have to do that for them.
Yeah, by the way, and speaking of which, that's a perfect segue for me to say that our good friend Terry Cosgrove will be joining us tomorrow from Personal PAC. And that, of course, is the abortion rights PAC in the state of Illinois. And I am sure that Terry knows absolutely everything about these districts, and he's already gearing up for when to put Trump's head. And one thing on the neck of any judge running in the, because Terry Cosgrove knows politics.
Terry Cosgrove is a perfect person to take that role.
in this race. And, you know, there's other people who will do that as well. But I think that's going to come from outside groups more than it's going to come from the candidates and their campaigns themselves.
All right. We'll be, Ed, we'll be following this one as it, you'll be our, the Ben Jarowski Show special, Supreme Court, election correspondent. We'll be with updates. So, we're going to close by transitioning, to this one conversation that Ed, I'd love you, to weigh in on. Has nothing to do with Illinois politics, but you've already proven your ability to talk about things other than judicial elections. So here we go. Monroe told me this before we went on the air. And I would like, Monroe, for you to share this theory with our listeners. I thought it was a fascinating theory. And it has to do with like the one third theory, Monroe. 30% of the country is always ready to believe some batshit crazy idea or philosophy.
The opposite direction.
Go ahead. Yeah, explain.
Yeah, and the theory is that throughout our history, 30% of the country, you know, let's go with the Revolutionary War. 30% of the country, well, they weren't a country then, but 30% of those here that could vote, the white men with property, wanted to stay with the with England. They didn't want an independent country. During the Civil War, 30% wanted to keep slavery, hardcore. Civil rights movement, 30% were against civil rights. But this is a theory I heard, I can't remember who, but somebody on MSNBC espoused. And I found it interesting. I'm not saying I completely agree with it or not, but I found it very interesting. Well, a very interesting observation.
So I started testing him, Ed. So I said, well, what about 9/11? You know, I don't know. What were the 30% in 9/11? And then Monroe said people who believe that the government itself was complicit in the blowing up of the building. And then I said, well, what about during Pearl Harbor? And he said it was people who believed that FDR put all the major battleships in one place so that it was easier for Japan to bomb them because he wanted to get into the war. In other words, every historical event, there's a group of people who just have a point of view that's like different than the mainstream. And Ed, I'm like, when I hear that, and Monroe, I'll throw this to you as well. I don't know whether to be assured or not about where we stand right now, because I see so many people in this country espousing so many whacked out points of view that just seem to defy all logic. And
social media has complicated this stuff because you now have this, industry of lying that puts out lies for hire. I mean, you can buy your lies. You know, this may happen in our judicial election, but there are industries where you could, if I have $30,000 to throw away, I could hire one of these companies to put out false information that would have me a Harvard Law School graduate and the editor of the Harvard Law Review before Obama was the editor of it or something. You know, you have these, so that changes. I mean, now it's hard. I mean, everything's crazy, basically, where we are right now with social media. Now, we'll see if that maintains itself or not. And I got some breaking news for you. They're going to vote on infrastructure tonight. They got a deal.
Oh, they cut a deal.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my, while we were sitting here today.
Right, exactly.
So I guess, are you telling me that it's going to be a bipartisan? They got 10 Republicans aside with?
Yeah, we have a bipartisan. Yeah.
I got to see that.
To debate and discuss it. I mean, we're not going to have a bill. We're going to have it go to the Senate and where it's actually discussed.
A joke. All right, Ed Mullen, as before, I won't drag you into a filibuster discussion at this moment. Although I do think that's really a joke, Monroe, that you got to beg and plead just to have a debate with the Republicans. One more time, Democrats, this is what you're up against. Okay, right. I'm just trying to say, Ed Mullen, 30%. Do you buy this? Are you reassured by that? By the notion that there's always people who believe in extreme theories? Does it make you more less scared about where we are right now?
You know, it's interesting. It's consistent with what happens in a lot of low information elections. So, you know, judicial retention elections in Cook County are low information. And usually you got about 30% of the people who just vote no. They just vote no. Right. If you're a state representative who's running for re-election and a candidate that's not really campaigning runs against them, they usually get 30% just because you got that 30% out there that are contrarians. So, you know, it seems pretty consistent with my experience in elections to extrapolate that out to, you know, general thoughts on the state of the world. So that, you know, that doesn't surprise me.
All right. I was hoping to see if it reassures you in any way. By the way, that theory was really at play and I'm trying to think. I think it was 1986. And only a junkie who needs help would remember this. People despise so much the coalition of candidates that the Democratic Party had put together, the Rainbow Coalition of Candidates. That with Adlai Stevenson at the head of it, I think Ori Paczynski was somewhere on that bunch, that they voted for LaRouche's, and the Dems woke up. Monroe's nodding. He remembers.
I remember the LaRouche. Yeah, I didn't remember the year, but no.
Oh my God, Adlai Stevenson was suddenly like his lieutenant. In those days, you ran into separate candidates' campaign, so you didn't have a running mate. And he ran LaRouche was his running mate, and there was a LaRouche candidate for Secretary of State as well. Ed, I want to say I was a secretary. So all of a sudden, Adlai Stevenson had to put together a third party. And with his own, you know, slate of candidates and stuff.
And Hare Krishners were campaigning for him at the airport.
Yeah. So, Ed, that's your theory on steroids. Ed, do you have any thoughts on the filibuster before we close for the day?
I just am flabbergasted that the Democrats have the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and we can't get anything done. I mean, we've got to get rid of the filibuster, significantly reform it, or we're being ruled by 35% of the country. That 35% that believes all these crazy theories are voting in the Wyoming and South Dakota and North Dakota and all these senators who are representing such a small amount of the population that, you know, we've got 35-40% of the country, tyranny of the minority, not tyranny of the majority. I think it's gone too far.
I agree with you. All right, Ed Mullen, thank you very much for taking the time to come explain the complexities of our system here for electing Supreme Court justices. I'm going to definitely bring you back. Folks, you got to be awake at this stuff. You can't fall asleep. Republicans aren't falling asleep. They're very dutiful about this. And, of course, Monroe Anderson every Wednesday on the show talking Trump. Thank you very much, Monroe. And, of course, I want to thank the man, the myth, the legend, the pride of joy in Alton, Illinois, without whom the show would be possible. And as Monroe and Ed can tell you, back home in Alton, they call him Dr. D. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody.